because of you.
There is St. Jude.
Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes. Welcome to Toker Talk Radio. Radical Russ hanging out here. The phone lines are open at 844-420-RADIO. That's 844-207-2346. Welcome to all our listeners on all the platforms out there and many more coming up. We are about to get ourselves set up for a live stream on iTunes. So those of you listening on podcast iTunes, you can get it live stream iTunes as well. That'll be pretty cool. And we've got a lot of listeners out there that listen on dial-up. And I wanted to let you know that you can listen on a low bandwidth stream that we now have available for you. It's at listen.djcmedia.com. listen.djcmedia.com/420 radio low, L-O-W, 420-RADIO-LOW. So listen.djcmedia.com/420 radio low. And that'll give you the low 32K bandwidth. It's great for phones as well, so that you're not using up so much data. I'm also currently working on the new 420 radio app that will take advantage of that low bandwidth stream and be able to switch high or low depending on whether you want sound quality or you want low data. So great stuff coming up for 420 Radio. Thanks for your support. Thanks for being a VIP of 420 Radio. You can become a VIP by going to 420radio.org/donate. And thank you for all those donations, because they really come in handy. This weekend, I will be in Virginia at the Virginia Normal Conference, the regional conference for the Mid-Atlantic states. Find out more at vanormal.org. So I'll be flying Friday. We won't have a live show on Friday. At the Virginia Normal Conference, I'll be giving my presentation on framing marijuana legalization, and I'll definitely be using those examples from Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders to make a couple of really good points. Also, I will be performing the 420 Radio Drug Test, our little game show of marijuana reform trivia. So that'll be fun. We'll get all that recorded for you and get it put up at my SoundCloud page. All right, so coming up on this second hour, we are going to have an extended talk from Doug Fine, the organic cowboy himself, the solar-powered goat herder. He will be talking about industrial hemp and moving forward through the future and how we can have cannabis unity among all the disparate groups of medical marijuana, adult-use cannabis, industrial hemp, spiritual ganja, for whatever reason you like to use it, how we can have unity. So stay tuned for that talk coming up after our 20 after safety meeting. Other stories going around, because I got to be honest, folks, I'm getting tired of talking about Ohio. It's tough, man. it's stunning to me, still stunning, that we're going to have a vote on marijuana legalization and a vote that in the polls right now is sitting at 56%. That's, to me, you know, it's just really shocking that this isn't being promoted. And I say this, the rant that I did is done out of love, because I love the marijuana reform organizations. I do. MPP, DPA, Normal, ASA, love them. Many of my friends work for these organizations. So I worry about the perception of these organizations. I worry how cannabis consumers out there are perceiving their actions, because in the case of, say, Drug Policy Alliance and Normal, you have the two of those organizations heavily promoting I-502. Now, I was for I-502, and I still think I-502 was a watershed moment and a very important vote for us to win. But from a cannabis consumer's perspective, it's a bit of a shit sandwich. Yeah, we got legal possession, but we didn't get home grow, and we added a per se DUID that guarantees any toker out there who tokes with any frequency cannot drive legally. Every time I'm driving in Washington State, my biggest fear is a fender bender or a traffic stop, because I'm never below 5 nanograms per milliliter. And I voted for I didn't vote for it because I didn't live in Washington, but I was supportive of 502 because I felt there was a greater good to be accomplished by being one of the first states to legalize than the bad of subjecting innocent cannabis consumers to DUIDs. I took a lot of heat for that. I'm still suffering the effects of that. I'm blacklisted in places because of that. So it's just weird to us at this side to see such overwhelming, over-the-top promotion and support for something that frankly fucked cannabis consumers at some level. And yet this silence and cold shoulder to a legalization that, from the consumer's perspective, far exceeds what Washington State gave us. Far exceeds it. All because the business model isn't right? Because some landowners are going to get rich? Because it's a cartel written into the Constitution? Do you understand how that, from the cannabis consumer's perspective, that sounds like, hey, you consumers, you can eat your shit sandwich and you've got to take one for the team so that we can legalize. But you can't have the legalization that's better than that in Ohio because business, because money, because rich people. You have to just continue taking the tickets and the arrests and the harassment. And in the case of medical marijuana patients, possibly death. It's just amazing to me, especially the medical marijuana side, because every time a worse and worse and worse compromise gets made on medical marijuana, those of us who complain about it are always beaten back with, patients can't wait, as if we're some kind of assholes because we'd want people to suffer and die because we think a particular medical marijuana compromise isn't good enough. And yet now, patients can't wait? That's supposedly off limits for me now? When it's a legalization that would actually help patients in that state too by instituting medical marijuana with freaking workplace protections? God, this is just blowing my mind. And you know what? I'm proud of where I stand on this. I'm proud, even if I'm the only one making noise to help free cannabis consumers in Ohio, I'm proud to do it. I will never, ever vote to keep prohibition in effect unless the alternative is worse for cannabis consumers. I got to ask that question. Is there something you wouldn't vote for? Where would you draw the line? Well, to me, if it made things worse for cannabis consumers, all of them, at this point, I'd vote against it. If I-502 came up now, I could be argued into voting against it. I could be reasoned into voting against it now. Now that we've got legalization, we're on the right track. Because it did make things worse for cannabis consumers. Most of them. The frequent consumers. That's going to be my litmus test at this point. Does it make it worse or better for consumers? I could give 0.2 of a tick's turd about the business side. Hey, you want to propose legalization where only the state can grow it in a state farm and delivered through state dispensaries? I'd support it because it would make things better for cannabis consumers. You know how I feel. So let's take a break. When we come back, I'll find something happier to talk about here on Toker Talk Radio.
Jive, marry, grifo, grass, hay. Technically, it's cannabis sativa, the common name, marijuana. She has found a crutch to see her through her difficulties instead of facing up to them and coping with them. And in time, she may be ready to try something different, something better.
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
420 Radio, freeing your mind 24 hours a day. Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your cannabis 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPAs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com. 420 Radio is listener-supported 24-hour internet radio. Our mission is to provide exposure to the activists nationwide fighting for the end of marijuana prohibition. You can help sustain our mission with a one-time donation to 420 Radio at 420radio.org/donate. You can also become a monthly VIP member at 420radio.org/donate and get access to our members-only content. Your donation keeps our stream and podcasts free at 420radio.org/donate.
Let's talk about the plan to legalize marijuana. The politicians are playing games by calling it a monopoly. They'll do anything to trick voters. It's not a monopoly. It's a plan that initially limits the number of growers for strict regulation before adding more. It provides medical marijuana for those in need. It creates jobs and generates tax revenue. If you think it's time to legalize marijuana, this is our chance. Vote no on 2 and yes on 3.
Welcome back, everybody. 15 after the hour. Just a little time here to update you on sports. As you know, here at 420 Radio, big fans of mixed martial arts, in particular the UFC, Ultimate Fighting Championships. And of course, there was the big story of Nick Diaz being suspended, basically a lifetime suspension, because it's 5 years and careers are short in MMA. He's on the long side of the fighter's age, too, I think approaching his 30s. And Nick Diaz got suspended by the Nevada State Athletic Commission for his third failed marijuana test, 5 years suspension. The guy he was fighting against, Anderson Spider Silva, got caught with steroids in his system, got a 1 year suspension. Now, indeed, this was the third strike for Diaz, and I think it was a first strike for Silva. But observers all around the world following mixed martial arts spoke out about how ignorant and ridiculous it is to be suspending fighters for smoking pot. It's not going to give them any sort of advantage in the ring. Although I could probably make a case that in the octagon, if you were really high, it might make you more limber and less susceptible to pain. And so things like arm bars and, you know, ankle locks and stuff might not hurt as much. Maybe you could make that case, but at the levels that they're testing at for metabolites, mind you, it's obvious these guys aren't high at the time, right? And nobody's even contending that that's the case, okay? So anyway, Nick Diaz gets suspended. The sport's number one star, Rowdy Ronda Rousey, came out and said how ignorant it was, how stupid it was. And then footage came out of her on the Joe Rogan experience, Joe Rogan's podcast, where she was probably high. So this is starting to get some attention. And now one of the sport's biggest male stars, he's retired now, but is considering coming out of retirement. And folks, oh my God, Georges St-Pierre from the UFC is just a monster in the octagon, just an unstoppable fighter for the most part. I don't remember his exact record. I don't think he was undefeated, but a monster, like maybe one or two losses, right? So Georges St-Pierre has reacted to this, saying, quote, "Personally, 5 years, I find that is too much, especially when one thinks Anderson Silva and other guys who doped received a small suspension compared to his." End quote. St-Pierre believes the commission wanted to make an example out of Nick Diaz, saying, quote, "I think they wanted to use him to pass a message because he is a colorful character who speaks a lot, that makes a lot of noise. It wanted to set an example, as was done in Olympic sports with Marion Jones, for example. Unfortunately, it fell on him, but I believe that everyone is entitled to a second chance." End quote. He also continued, quote, "It is a drug, yes, but I believe that there should be different penalties for certain products that competitors use. Marijuana can help a person who suffers from anxiety, but it can't make you physically stronger or more powerful or more efficient. I do not believe that it should be judged in a severe way," end quote. Now, Nick Diaz fought Georges St-Pierre at UFC 154 in March of 2013. St-Pierre won a unanimous decision. And St-Pierre says he likes Diaz and hopes that he can return to fighting, saying, quote, "There is a need of guys like him in the sport, and I hope that he will come back soon. If I can help him one way or another without embarrassing myself, it'll make me happy to do so. It's someone I like, and wish him the best of luck," end quote. So this is something that athletes are starting to make some noise about. You're hearing it more in the NFL as well. And if Ohio is to legalize marijuana in 20 days, we will then have two more teams, the Browns and the Bengals, to join the Seahawks and the Broncos as NFL teams in legal marijuana states. And more than half the NFL teams are in states that have legal medical marijuana. So it's just unconscionable that the NFL wouldn't allow football players to use marijuana for pain or for the trauma from concussions that we know THC can help alleviate. It's just a crime, especially in a medical marijuana state, to not allow them to do so. I'm hoping that in the very, very near future, we live to see a time when sports aren't testing athletes for marijuana at all. It's not helping their performance. It's only a political message and a moral stand.
I can't do reefer comedy. I'm drunk. Two different animals.
All right, folks, that whistle means that it's time for our 420 safety meeting. We, of course, always want to be safe. We encourage safety in all its forms. So if you get the chance to be safe right now, take yourself that opportunity. Because I know we are with our strong silicone, glow-in-the-dark, unbreakable bong. Back after this.
420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest. The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details. The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear, and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
marijuana legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
We return to the Oregon Hemp Convention for Doug Fine's address just this last Sunday in Portland.
All right, everyone. I hope everyone's having a great time at the Oregon Hemp Convention. I would like to take just a couple seconds here to introduce my friend and colleague, Doug Fine. He's going to be giving a presentation called We Won. We set the terms for a kind, regenerative cannabis economy. Doug Fine is a solar-powered goat herder. He's the author of Hemp Bound, First Legal Harvest, Too High to Fail, and Farewell My Subaru. He's an outstanding colleague and just the best hemp cheerleader there could possibly be. And I am just really proud that he is here, and I'd like to just give him the stage. Please give it up for Doug Fine.
So first of all, Oregon, compliments to the chef, okay? I travel around this world, and immediately farmers, I guess what I'm saying is I have a good job. Farmers say, try my best stuff. And it's a bit redundant to say that what you people in this gentle state cultivate, especially under God's sun, is top shelf and among the best in the world. And that's the theme of what we're going to be talking about here today, because some branding's going to have to happen very soon. And the Oregon brand is regenerative, sustainable agriculture. We're going to talk about the mode to get there today, partly through a concept of agriculture that I shorthand as tri-cropping, and we'll get into that. Next slide, please. Almost everybody here will know all of this already, but just for a little bit of background, it's always good not to make assumptions. This year was the second year that U.S. farmers were able to grow, theoretically, under federal and state, completely legal. It's a research provision under the big farm bill of 2014, and we're seeing, next slide please, we're seeing exponential growth. So Kentucky went from half a dozen projects last year to something like 120 permitted this year, and the amount of acreage was unbelievable. We'll see slides from a 70-acre harvest in a little while. Oops, can we go back? Oh yeah, there we go, sorry, I went back. So let's talk a little bit about the 2015 harvest, which I'm fresh back from. Let's go to the next slide, please. The first thing I want you guys to see in this slide is the joy. This is, I referred to this one a little bit earlier today, this is the moment of first pressing of the first Vermont-grown hemp oil. Fourth generation Vermont farmer there, John Williamson on the left, and all he wants to do is create a craft oil market and business from Vermont farmers, hemp and other seed oils, and he's got an organic mindset, and he's not taking no for an answer. Next slide. It's hard to see this one on the contrast, but that gas mask I'm wearing is to go into a tobacco barn in a dry county, Western Kentucky, Christian County last week, where specialty tobacco farmers who grow smokeless tobacco have to keep their fires going in their fire barn for weeks. And they asked me if I wanted to go into the fire barn. I said, of course. So they gave me this gas mask, and it was really cool to see the tobacco, 10 acres of tobacco leaves in there. And they're dedicated hempsters. They're dedicated Baptists, and it's a dry county, and they're all about hemp. Next slide, please. Kentucky's Agriculture Commissioner, James Comer, in an interview last week, I asked him if he thought that hemp would be a major crop in the repository for Kentucky's farmers in the next 5 years, and he said, up there or above everything else, the corn, the tobacco, everything. No question about it. That's it. Next slide, please. So this is where we get into the Oregon brand, okay? Now, here's the reality. Everybody here is focused on their now. It's a exciting time and it's a scary time. I get approached by cannabis farmers a lot in places like Oregon and Northern California, and they're not uniformly ecstatic about legalization. Some of them are quite worried. A few have broken into tears while telling me their stories of trying to support their family and put their kids through college, and what about if the prices go down and all that business. And it's a harsh reality, and as a journalist, my it's a beautiful reality, too, for those who can adapt, but it's a harsh reality for those who can't, and my job as a journalist is to tell the truth. And the truth as I see it economically is after federal legalization, in your corner store, it might not be Philip Morris that's putting the ganja or the hemp products in the convenience store or in the Walmarts or the box stores, but it will be some sort of outside force like that. The only hope for an Oregonian farmer is to cultivate what Michael Pollan calls supermarket pastoral. The story behind your farm, why you chose this strain, how you treat the soil, how you treat the people that work with you and for you, where your profits go, transparent along with ingredients, go way past organic standards, go into what really matters and what I, as a customer, is the kind of company that I want to support, right? That's the brand, and it's a niche market. Ideally, the tastes will change so much that you guys will become the mainstream supporting Walmart, but the reality is your margin lies in showing the rest of the world what would Dr. Bronner's do. Run your company like Dr. Bronner's soap. Quick note on this slide. We can talk more about it when we come back to it, but this was, the day before yesterday, Edgar, was it? 2 days ago, 3 days ago, this slide. Is that right, Eric? 2 days ago? Let's play a game. Show of hands, how many people think the plant on the left as you're facing it is hemp? Show of hands if you think the plant on the left is hemp. Two, okay. And how many people think the plant on the right is hemp? Plant on the right is hemp? I can't vote for both. Oh, yeah, I guess you can. You can vote for both. Okay. And, okay, so I forgot what I've asked, but the plant on the left is psychoactive cannabis, and the plant on the right is what we today call hemp. So here's one of my major themes, people, for a coherent Oregonian message, and that is, let's get past the THC madness. We have to make an activist movement to nationwide, worldwide. Tasmania's ahead of us. Tasmania's hemp is allowed to have 1% THC. The plant wants it. Does everybody know what I'm talking about? Does anyone have questions about this? The point is we're not going to be delineating between industrial hemp and psychoactive cannabis. We already know. There are people in this room, there are people I'm winking at right now, who are proving that herd from cannabis has fantastic qualities for construction and others. And we all know dang well that a seed oil crop with 4 or 5% THC, like it had in the Garden of Eden, like it had in Thomas Jefferson's crop, is going to produce more nutritive oil and stronger and better fiber. So that's something that we need to focus on. Next slide, please. The Vermonters, they bless them. They planted from bird seed last year. They had 3% germination, I think. And this year, they planted from that 10 times as many acres and got 90% germination. Next slide, please. You can't really see in the contrast, but they're harvesting. There was a rainstorm coming in, and my friends Ken and Robin in Vermont were up all night harvesting that hemp crop. Next slide, please. This was earlier in that day where they were teaching me hand threshing. Every seed is so precious to them. They do not sacrifice a single seed. They need them to replant. This is Minutemen stuff. These were the people who beat the British. Next slide. They're also beekeepers, and I've been wanting to beekeep, and it's like, we all know, starting with cannabis reemerging, we're all getting what we wish for, right? You just ask, and the universe gives, and then just be kind to someone else. So I asked for a lesson in beekeeping, and they gave it to me. It was fun. I didn't get stung. I feel more confident about it. We didn't get a still shot of this. In a grain silo in Kentucky, it was the site that I, I, it was like a fantasy. It was literally a fantasy realized. I climbed into a really big silo that was half filled with, I can't remember how many thousands of pounds of hemp seed, and swam around in it and scooped it. It was very cushy. It was a nice mattress. It was true. It was like platonic love for the plant. Amy was there. She was like, when's my turn? Next slide, please. This is photo got cut off a little bit. This is feeding the hemp oil press in Vermont. There's more than one oil processor ready to go for hemp in Vermont. We all know processing is an issue we have to deal with here with hemp. Next slide, please. So Mike Lewis saved my life in the Merchant Marine about 60 years ago, and ever since then, I can't say no to him. Thankfully, all of his ideas are really good. A week or two before this photo was taken, which is, by the way, us making tea from the hemp that we harvested on his field at St. Catherine's College in Kentucky. Wendelberry's papers are there. That's his home. There's a whole cool backstory about that story. But Mike is a disciple of Wendelberry. And so about a week or two before we start texting about starting some sort of something edible from the crop, what should we do? Something edible. We were talking roots. My sweetheart is really into, you know, creating healthy tinctures and stuff for our family, so we avoid orange bottles. And I texted Andrew, the third fellow in this picture, who's also here today. I texted him pictures from my phone with ancient recipes for how to render roots. And anyway, we decided to do this tea. It was really good. It was leaves and flowers brewed for a few minutes, orange zest and ginger, and I don't know. It made the moon seem red that night. It was incredible. It was the harvest moon. Okay, next slide, please. Harvesting in Kentucky with a tobacco knife. That axe is called a tobacco knife. They had it sharpened so much it nicked my wrist, and I still, like a week later, I mean, it could have, one inch further, it could have been really bad. And I blame Amy for that one, because that was the day that she was our sound man for our television, our sound woman for our television crew, and she wasn't there to protect me from the, she's usually the one who's like, Doug, if you take one more step, you're going to fall off a cliff. Next slide, please. So this is an interesting crop. This is a strain, or do we call it a cultivar, called Cherry that my friend Bill developed, and he has a farmer's co-op, and anybody who has organic acreage in Colorado is allowed to be part of this farmer's co-op. All the revenue goes to the farmers. The only thing they do is grow this zero, low THC, high CBD, bushy strain they call Cherry that they stumbled upon in an act of God as psychoactive cannabis cultivators. They call it hemp, and so they can call it organic because it's grown on certified organic soil, loopholing the USDA prohibition on that. Then they render it on organic coconut oil. They decarboxylate it. So they're giving people super active CBD and other cannabinoids. And I know Amy and I, during that part of our recent tour, lived on it. And it's the real deal. It's good stuff. And they're not in it for the they're not personally in it for the money. The folks that are leading these co-ops, they are in it for farmers getting back to the land and cultivating a real crop. They're not dedicated to cannabinoids forever. They just this is where they're going for the first year, and they're doing it right. Next generation business model and organic cultivation techniques. These are my goats: Taylor Swift, Mork, Bjork, and Feist, respectively. They are currently eating the hemp protein byproduct from that Vermont oil pressing that it did last week, and they're really doing quite well on it. They're feisty. They're aptly named. And I show this slide, next slide, please, because it really does come back to personal things for me. I'm a father, and the only, you know, real... As long as my family is okay and healthy, everything, I can't really even get too mad about anything. It helps when you have a state with full cannabis legalization, but even without it, I'm a pretty happy guy. I've come to believe that the number one thing we can do to sequester carbon in this from our industrial byproducts and our modern society is by sequestering it in the soil. and hemp rebuilds that soil. Now, we were having a heated conversation in the green room before this talk about the phytoremediative qualities of hemp, but here are the facts on the ground. The tap roots alone and the aeration that they create, and Edgar showed me this. He's my hemp professor, and we were harvesting a couple of days ago. Hey, EJ, that one hemp root in the greenhouse, 2 feet long, was it? That root, it was incredible. Oh, was this the one? Oh. Thank you, Eric. Eric Hempseed was there as well. Did we save? Oh, yeah, we did. So, I mean, this is about the future of humanity right here. This is about the future livable, breathable climate. Just the aeration. Forget about the microbiology that it allows. So please don't talk to me about growing organically indoors. I have to give my quick spiel here because otherwise I don't want to be a ist and I don't want to be judgmental. God bless anybody who brought us this blessed plant during the dark days of Prohibition. But I feed myself and my family only healthy food grown in healthy soil in, under God's sun. Why would my medicine, my health maintenance, my ceremonial, and my social lubricant be grown in a hothouse with potential toxics? No, that doesn't make any sense, at least in terms of the way that I look at holistic health. So we obviously have to grow outdoors. And Oregonians get this message more probably than just about... Sorry, ladies. You mind if I just keep hugging them while we're talking? Anyway, you get the point. It's all about the soil. Next slide, please. Okay, so tri-cropping. Thanks. Thank you. Wow. Do you all know about Cannabis Basics? Great products. I'll see if I can talk her later into officially being a sponsor of the tour.
Thank you.
3.5 hours. Yeah. We'd use it prominently throughout the tour. Okay, so the legs of tri-cropping. Tri-cropping is a very simple concept that I write about in Hempbound and First Legal Harvest, and none of this is new to me. All I am is somebody that takes complicated concepts and explain it to the wider world so they come on board with our values, right? And tri-cropping is simple. You have three basic things I feel that you can do with the plant, categories. One is a seed flower thing. The seed obviously is this nutritive superfood. I usually have a packet of hemp seeds in my pocket. I feed it to my family every day. Google online, I did interviewed nutritionists about real studies on hemp seed and how healthy it is, and it's the real deal. The GLA, the strong cell-building qualities in the fatty acids, and the perfect omega balance, it's just the beginning. Then you have the flowers, nutraceuticals. I'd like to argue for getting beyond this THC-CBD discussion. I think it's great that kids are being helped, epilepsy with CBD, but the bottom line is, as we approach 100 known cannabinoids interplaying with bioflavonoids and terpenes, to be talking about one or two cannabinoids as the answer is we'll look back and laugh. It's going to be an entourage, and it's not going to be an entourage created in the laboratory. It's going to be an entourage created in the soil by loving farmers, small farmers supplying locally their regional farm economies for all hemp applications from medicinal through nanotechnology. And I'm really excited about nanotechnology. Next slide, please. Okay, so energy is really a big one. In Oregon, we haven't yet convinced the state agriculture department to allow farmers to grow large acreage with assistance in getting the seeds in, the way states like Kentucky have, right? Why do we need large acreage? Biomass energy research. Can we please go to the first video there? This is a dude in Maine with a gasifier from his waste sawdust from his small woodworking business. And thank you so much. By the way, really, Dustin and all the tech people, can we just give them a round of applause? They're just wonderful doing it out of love. Thank you. So not a big unit, not that expensive, and in this case just provides the guys energy. It's an anaerobic combustion process. Ideally, we'd like to move beyond combustion. We'll get to that in a little while. But why are we not energy independent from our biomass waste? There are entire communities in Europe that are. Thanks, that's it. Let's go back to the Photoshop, PowerPoint, thanks. Okay, so whenever you're ready, next slide. Okay, we all have our rock stars. This is Zhi Li, who was part of David Mitlin's team in discovering last year that hemp fibers, when reduced to one carbon-thick sheets, known as graphene, outperform the known and pretty toxic to produce best supercapacitors, next-generation batteries, outperforms them slightly at 1/1,000th of the cost. That's today's currency cost, not tomorrow's children's cost even factored in. Another change we need to make to our economy, right? Anyway, I met this guy, and he was like, couldn't believe that he had such a big fan. I was like, Mr. G, can I get a picture with you? And it was really awesome. Then last week, we're in the HIA convention in Kentucky, and I interviewed the head of the project, David Mitlin, professor, and I asked him, and you know, cautious academic, right? Not a hempster. He revealed this study that we're talking about, the supercapacitor study, at the convention of the American Chemical Society, okay? And I said, Professor Mitlin, are we going to see hemp fibers in our Teslas 5 years from now? And he said, I think sooner than that. And I thought, boy, that's a fast concept to market. But evidently, I'm sorry, hemp is the answer for next generation batteries too. It's like Eric likes to say, hemp everything. For me, it's a hemp app a day. Every day, somebody is telling me another viable application that's really really going to happen. The 3D printing thing from fiber is going to happen. Here's another interesting thing from that conversation with David Mitlin. I had twisted a little hemp bracelet around my wrist that day in the farm, and I think it was Mike Lewis's farm in Kentucky, or the previous day. So you can imagine this kind of half-redded, squiggly little thing around my wrist. And I said, does it have to be fancy? I'm thinking, you know, wait a second. Really? A bunch of hippies potentially could grow tomorrow's energy field? Like a bunch of clueless people like me could grow this weed and power the future? But no, it must be. You need fancy, like, super perfect fibers, 15 feet long and harvested only by the latest lasers. I said, would this work? And he said, I don't recall us asking for anything. This was in Alberta where they did the study. Anything other than just bring us some of your scrap hemp fiber. And I was like, in other words, this. And he was like, yeah, it looked a little bit like that. I was like, hallelujah, hallelujah. Because in truth, it means we can grow tomorrow's energy in our backyards. Nanotechnology, care of a plant. I wasn't already a religious man. Next slide, please. Nutraceuticals have come on strong. Some might argue too strong. There's this rush to get CBD out. CBD is fantastic if it's rendered like the shaman used to render it, if like the witches used to render it. You know, that's the mode we're looking for when it comes to nutraceuticals. I've got no problem with people cultivating this plant for anything that they want to. Just try to remember that it's win-win. And again, your Oregon niche is farming outdoors under God's sun. And rendering things as absolutely as naturally as possible. Go way beyond organic. Look at how Dr. Bronner structures their company in payment scale, 5 times CEO, 5 times more than the lowest paid worker. Everything is fairly traded. They even get their olive oil from an olive grove in the Holy Land, cultivated jointly by Israelis and Palestinians. We've talked a little bit about hempcrete and hemp herd. One cool thing I learned from beekeeping research is that bees love, and I've seen this in Oregon fields over the last couple of days, bees love hemp, but they don't do traditional pollination and traditional returning and part of the honeymaking process with it, evidently, at least in this one study. They use it to strengthen the hive wall for hempcrete, impermeable, well, breathable but strong walls, and they bring it nutritively or medicinally to the queen to eat. So that's kind of interesting. All over the world, people are thinking about getting back to hemp. In Slovenia, the government, I visited there for the World Hemp Congress last year, the government sent out their peasant band to bless the crop. And if we could go to the, oh, well, we'll wait to go to the videos for a couple more. The main thing we need, of course, is commercial cultivation in the U.S. Folks can ask during the Q&A if they don't know what I'm talking about, but we're under a research provision that's stifling states like Oregon that don't have the top-level state support that's needed. Next slide, please. That tractor on the left is the red part. The tractor body is made from the hemp that it is harvesting. The Canadians in Alberta are getting serious about doing stuff with the fiber instead of just the billion-dollar seed oil crop that they have that's growing 20% per year. At the Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance convention last year, these prairie types, picture, you know, Grant Wood with the pitchfork. These are Canadians. These people make North Dakotans look like partiers. They're so dour, right? They were like, happy days are here. They were so excited. I'm not kidding. At their sort of membership meeting before the convention, they had the chart of growth with the like cartoon other chart tacked to the top because of their projections for growth in hemp over the next decade. Like, there's no way that the demand for organic hemp is going to exceed supply over the next decade, according to the Canadians. Now, I often get asked, big agriculture or backyard agriculture or regional agriculture? My favorite, for reasons of carbon miles alone, would be regional. For a place like Hawaii, that would be necessary. Everything you import into Hawaii has so many carbon miles attached to it, it's expensive in environmental cost as well as real cost. So you need to be regional. But you meet Ryan Laughlin in Southeast Colorado, the fellow on the left side of the slide there, and his family is in debt hundreds of thousands of dollars to big farm equipment manufacturers, and all they were in the GMO cycle, the whole cycle, the thing, and not making any dough, and he needs to cultivate large acreage. And so we'll go to the videotape here, and I'll show you three models and tell you how I think each one could work. Thanks, Dustin. Yeah, that one. So this is, if I'm not mistaken, this is Netherlands, and this is the real deal. They're not kidding around about their acreage. Look at the density. Dr. Eiko was talking about hemp density earlier. So that's big ag. What do you want to do with that? Biomass? There's a fellow in Austria selling 40 acres back to his grid gasification we were talking earlier of his hemp farm. He nets 140,000 euros per year. So something like that is an easy thing, but we all know, nanotechnology, all of it. So let's go to model number two. Model number two is more the only thing I could ever see myself doing, which is just, it's a big field in the Ukraine, but it's just a dude's tractor. And, you know, although I personally don't like starting engines or fixing them or the noise of them, and I like to hear birds while I'm planting and harvesting, I could be associated with a farm that harvests in this mode. Next slide, please. So a farmer's co-op, for instance, might use equipment like that. This one actually, let's go to QuickTime for this third slide. Thank you, yeah. This was me getting schooled by the Slovenians in peasant scythe harvesting. It's a miracle nobody lost a limb during this day in Slovenia. They were serious about the motion and conserving body energy and all that jazz. That's a Hungarian cultivar they were using that they freely transported in the back of a truck bed from a nearby Hungarian border. So, okay, we can go back to PowerPoint now. Thank you, Dustin. The point I'm trying to make on this one is that seems unrealistic. Dr. Bronner's soap, Mike and I were talking about this last night, 1% of their soap is hemp. I'm telling you that I met a woman in Canada. She was in that earlier picture about big farming versus small farming. Colleen Dick, a religious, a very religious Christian lady, triathlete, mother of five, who felt that the energy bars weren't good enough, nutritious enough, and won a government grant through winning a recipe contest for her hemp energy bar that's now marketed in every province in Canada. Her husband cultivates 60 acres of hemp. That's it, 60 acres for the whole business. And they'll be able to scale up, certainly, if they need to, but it's already a big national thing in Canada. So you can harvest on a small amount of ground. I also have a friend in the Czech Republic who, for something like 11 years now, gets yurts up in her field, brings her friends out, and they hand harvest flowers for the super high-end sort of Monaco French Riviera beauty market. It's just a super prestige, you know, growing with these organic standards, hand-harvested as part of the brand. Keep this in mind, folks, as you're thinking about your product. And, of course, in practical terms, this will work great in Hawaii. Visitors are going to want hemp macadamia crunch nuts or something like that, or macadamia nuts cooked in Hawaiian-grown hemp oil. Let's go back one quick slide here to Cultivar Detective. Most of you, as some of you in this room know all too well, the U.S. Hemp germplasm was lost tragically after Prohibition, but we're going to make lemonade out of lemons, and it's already happening. We can talk more about it in detail, but I am fascinated in watching the clever way that American farmers are bringing seed stock back. So just to list a couple of the models in the 26 states that I'm aware of and folks that I'm friends with are doing, I told you the Vermonters bird seeded it up from 3% cultivation to 80% cultivation. As Jerry alluded to earlier, many Oregonian farmers had to do they're heirloom. They just got here. And in Kentucky, the DEA is absolutely happy, not just to stamp, but in the case of one project I was affiliated with, amend within 72 hours a cultivar choice on a DEA permit for an application in Kentucky. It's over. If you were accepted by the Department of Agriculture for a hemp project in Kentucky, you can order 50,000 pounds of seed per acre with the federal stamp of approval, as well as the state stamp of approval. I promised my family I was only going to cultivate cannabis when there's federal and state legalization, and that's what we need in Oregon. That's what we need in Oregon. Now, but there's another side to this, though. If you're going to play that game, there's a tug of war going on about what you can do with the seeds. And as always, I think anyone who knows me would agree. I represent the reasonable middle ground. And the reasonable middle ground is between right to grow, like, excuse me? What company are you telling me, an American farmer, I can't save seeds? Are you kidding me? On the one hand, and the argument not without merit, on the other hand, we put 15, 18 years of research into the genetics of this. We deserve something. I agree. In that case, they deserve something. And this is not just Monsanto we're talking about here. My friend Jace Calloway of Finola put years and years of thankless research in cold Finland into his cultivar. He deserves to make something. So how about a middle ground? That's all I'm saying. And I realize it's radical and I'm just a theorist. But I was speaking to the Canadians seed folks a week or two ago and said, how about we do it like pharmaceuticals, where you have a certain number of years where everybody has to pay a royalty, especially if they want to save the seed, but then it sort of becomes generic and in the seed bank. And their first reaction was like, oh, no. And, you know, I hope the strength and the number of hemp farmers cultivating millions of acres from seed assigning seed, the message being you want something or you want nothing, might get across, that will help us find a reasonable middle ground. Because I think, do you guys agree we have to middle ground, or do you think, you know, just plant the seed? I mean, I think middle ground is where we have to go. They have a plant the seed, says Dave Siever. So this is not theoretical. This is not the Sahara Desert. This is Colorado soil. These people, this is a winter wheat crop not coming up in Colorado in terrible drought 2 seasons ago. In my own farm, I don't know if we have the slide. Can I see the next slide? This slide, in the bottom left corner, can you see that flood? Every year we have millennial floods or millennial fires. We had a 120,000-acre wildfire in my backyard in New Mexico now 2 years ago, and that scared a black bear into my goat corral, and in front of my family's eyes, including my kids, killed our goats. And he was just a refugee. He wasn't eating. He was just freaked out, jumped the fence, ran and killed 11 of my neighbor's sheep. The climate change, I mean, I don't have to tell an Oregon audience or any audience for that matter, climate change is real, but it's now directly affecting our lives. And so when I am coming here and hearing, as I travel and I hear opinions about a status quo that is not allowing us to heal soil and think about water quality, air quality, and mitigating climate change in every decision we make, I don't have any patience for it. I mean, I don't want to make it personal, but I take it as an affront to the health of my own children. And That's a lot of my motivation for this thing. Next slide, please. People know this already, but maybe if you live in progressive Oregon, the Kentucky delegation that supports hemp and is passing so many great hemp laws on the federal level is extremely conservative Republicans. And this is a big, big tent. Let's go to the next slide. It's also a big tent here in Oregon amongst the different varieties of the cannabis plant. If there is one final message I'd like to leave everybody with here today, it's that there is no division amongst the varieties of this plant. The lessons that the cannabis plant taught us during the dark years of Prohibition about trust and sharing, the neural network changes that occur in a good way from people who consciously use cannabis in a responsible way. We need to take those values as we emerge into the system. Let me give you one example on that. When I discuss projects with Mike Lewis from Kentucky about potential collaboration, we don't even want to discuss a model that's going to involve outside big investment, because then it's the model that doesn't think about sustainability in its charter anymore. What would Dr. Bronner's do? What would Dr. Bronner's do? They would take care of the earth and the people in their products. Next slide, please. I do think there's going to be a McHemp sandwich in McDonald's within 5 years. Look for it. Every time you get coffee, ask them for hemp oil. And don't the currently only sort of boxed hemp oil that's available adds natural flavors, otherwise known as dosing your body with dopamine. Don't let the word natural fool you. It's basically an MSG kind of thing. So you don't want any kind of flavoring in your hemp milk. But what you should ask your barista is to have whole hemp seeds, American-grown, Oregon-grown hemp seeds, and just churn them up in the blender with a few spices. And then you've got, cardamom or something. And then you've got a delicious coffee milk. There's a lot of talk about, will hemp be bigger than psychoactive cannabis? I just don't think there's going to be a difference between the plants. There's going to be industrial hemp applications that have that come from plants with 7 or 8% THC, and there's going to be psychoactive cannabis marketers of low-buzz, high-grade cannabis for when you don't want to get too effed up or something like that, Mild buzz by Menin, kind of thing. And there's going to be no more division between the types of plants. So I don't even like to answer that question anymore. There's no question to me it's a trillion-dollar economy for the U.S. And that is why hemp legalization happened. Farmers are not stupid. They were reading what the Canadians were making, and they were not going to tolerate it being legal anymore. And God bless James Comer and others for realizing it. Ben at Oregon Hemp Works, he's got those great soaps and lotions. He's got copies of all my books if you want to read them. Hemp Bound Outlines, A Model for Tri-Cropping's Return, and First Legal Harvest Printed on Hemp is the update from farmers who last year. It's just a real honor to be amongst the hemp farmers, even who are in this audience right now. But I also want to thank again Mike Lewis. He sent fiber from that first harvest into a book I wrote called First Legal Harvest, and it's in there today. So thank you, Mike Lewis. Woo!